Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot. And every week, we bring you interesting individuals in the world of sports medicine and human performance. And as we say every week, this week really is no exception because we have a wonderful guest with us. We have Mr. Zarek Rollins with us. Welcome to the podcast, Zarek.
Oh, thank you, Tim. It's really a pleasure to be here. I love the opportunity to be able to share.
Yeah, well, we're really glad to have you. And I'm going to tell the audience a little bit about you so they know where you're coming from, and then we'll just kick off with the conversation. Zarek came to Texas A&M from Houston. He originally graduated with a degree in economics and has his master's degree in educational administration from here at Texas A&M. Currently, he's the scholastic supervisor for student athletes at Texas A&M, and where he helps them build career and life skills. I don't want to say more importantly, but Zarek is also known as an athlete here as well. He was a defensive end here in Texas A&M in 1997, where he helped lead us to the Big 12 South Division title and played in the Cotton Bowl in 1998. He won the Academic Achievement Award as a student athlete, served as a graduate assistant here. He was a graduate assistant under R.C. Slocum, who we've had on the podcast in the past, as listeners know. He worked with for the Seattle Seahawks in 2001 as a defensive assistant coach. He moved through the ranks and started coaching linebackers in 2005. Coached them in the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so we're so glad to have Zarek here, back here in Aggieland, to share with us. And thank you again for being on the podcast.
No, it's good to be here. It really is.
Good deal. So let's talk about the Super Bowl.
All right. That's a good one.
Was it fun?
Oh, awesome.
Was it?
Unbelievable experience.
What's your memory from that?
Oh, I don't know. Just getting there. That's the first memory. Losing the game. You know, you don't get to the Super Bowl to lose.
Right.
But
right.
Just going through the entire experience was awesome.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
You didn't get to go to Disneyland afterwards, did
no,
you?
No, did not.
Sorry, that bad joke. We really want to talk to you today about your role here as a scholastic supervisor.
Okay.
One of the themes that we've kind of built on throughout the couple years we've been doing this is about the life of a student athlete. So many people think that the term student athlete really is false, is that the kids come here and they're really athletes first and students a distant 10th. That's really not the case, is it?
Not at all. You know, having been a former student athlete here, to me, the student definitely comes first.
Yeah.
For me, and that was emphasized from my family, my parents, you go to college to get a degree. That's most important. And athletics is just extra, you know, and your chances of making it to a professional level are slim to none. And so to me, it's all about academics.
Right.
That's where
right.
it starts. And you have the privilege of being able to play athletics.
How do you help kids understand that, though? Because most of them come here. I was in a conversation last night with a parent who thinks that her child is going to become a professional baseball player. And so they're not worried about future schooling because he's going to make it in professional baseball.
Well, my biggest thing is I want to help student-athletes see the big picture. That's what I tell them. Don't come in and see life through a straw.
Right.
Oh. There's so many other opportunities here. First off, you're at a great academic institution. You talk about the Aggie Network. There's just so many other positives of being at Texas A&M other than playing athletics. And so if they see the big picture and they put themselves in a situation where they get a degree, they meet people, they network, they're going to put themselves in a win-win situation. Because if you come here with the aspiration to just play professionally, the odds are against you.
Right.
When you talk about just football alone, you have less than 1% chance of making it. And so why would you come in with that approach? I mean, the odds are clearly against you.
So let's make sure the audience understands that. So 99% of the time, you're not going to make it in a pro ball.
Exactly.
That's big odds.
Yeah. And so one of the things I teach the champs class, which is for our freshman, sophomore student athletes. And towards the end, I have this one class where I say, okay, do you guys play the lottery? You know, guys, and they look at me and say, no, what are you talking about? Nobody wins the lottery. We don't play the lottery. I say, well, guess what? You're playing a lottery. If you come here, with the anticipation of just going pro, mm-hmm. and that's all you're thinking. Mm. And what I'm saying is the odds are clearly stacked against you. So my message to you is put yourself in a win-win situation. Get you a good degree, get out, network, and now the odds are in your favor. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
Well, nationwide, there's such an emphasis now on having, especially freshmen, come back for their sophomore year, this old retention thing. Mm-hmm. And being a freshman athlete, it must really be pressure-packed for these kids. What's the biggest problem they have when they come on campus?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just the time management, you know, because you have so many things that you're trying to get accustomed to. And then on top of that, everything has increased in terms of difficulty. Mm-hmm. You plan at a higher level competition-wise. You know, school is going to be harder. Just being able to manage and balance all those things, that's normally the biggest adjustment for all of them.
On top of that, do they have issues with all of a sudden now they have independence, more independence than they've had, and that becomes part of that time management issue?
And I tell them distractions.
Yeah.
Because now you got the independence.
Yeah.
And more times than not, as a student athlete, most of your time is structured. I mean, your day is gone.
Yeah.
But you do have some free time, and what you do with that can have a huge bearing on your success level.
I can remember going to college, and my big deal was I could eat any time I wanted to. Mm-hmm. It sounds silly now, but it's like, wow, that was a sign of independence for me. It wasn't I didn't have to eat at three specific times of the day.
Right, right.
So, yeah, oh, cool. So you've done a little bit of it all in your career mm-hmm. at this point, and you're a relatively young man mm-hmm. still. Mm-hmm. So as you think back, you were a coach at a very high level. What made you decide to get out of that kind of coaching track and come back and work with students in their scholastic achievement?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily got out of it.
But okay.
Going into the coaching, you know it's a volatile business. Hmm. I knew that, mm-hmm. you know, the odds and how things work. You see coaches where they're moving year to year.
Yeah.
And so going into it, I always said, what's your contingency plan? Hmm. If for some reason you can't find a job, you know, what else would you want to do outside of coaching?
Right.
And so at 22 years old, that's what I was thinking. And got my master's in education administration. So I've always had the plan to have an opportunity to be an athletic director. Mm. And so for me, when I couldn't find a coaching job, I spent 7 months working with Northwestern Mutual, which was a great opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. But when I saw this opportunity, it was an opportunity to get my foot back in the door and do something that I was passionate about, which was, you know, helping develop young student athletes.
And people see athletic departments and they really see the coaches as kind of the, you know, the head coaches they see as a representative of the athletic department. But there's this whole side of athletics that's almost a very stable side, especially in the student success rate mm-hmm. side of things. And that's and so you're saying that you kind of went back into that almost for stability and to do some other kind of impact things.
Well, first off, it was a passion of mine. Mm. You know, even because when I first got into coaching, my thing was I wanted to have an impact. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my coaches were very impactful to me. Mm-hmm. R.C. Slocum, Bill Johnson, who's a D-line coach for New Orleans Saints. But I just wanted to have an impact. Mm-hmm. And at first, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did an internship with Dr. Thornton. I did that for 6 months and wasn't sure if I wanted to go into athletic administration or coaching. Mm. So it was kind of a toss-up.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'm going to give coaching a try because I think I can have more of an impact. But coming back here doing this, this is still my part of my passion. I wanted to be able to impact, help develop. And in the position I'm in now, I may not be just working with football players. I'm working with all sports. You know, and which makes it neat. But at the end of the day, I'm still helping impact, helping them see the big picture, helping prepare them for life after.
What's the difference across the sports? We have, for the folks that are listening that aren't familiar with A&M, we've got a wide variety of sports teams here, mm-hmm. men's and women's, ranging from football to equestrian. Mm-hmm. What's the difference in working with those? What's the similarities and what's the difference in working with all those athletes?
I think similarity first, all of them are very competitive. Mm. They take pride in what they do. Mm-hmm. You notice that right off the bat. I think we have a lot of good coaches. I enjoy really talking to all the coaches. But every team has their own little culture, you know, and they have their own little personality, which is neat.
Yeah.
So I say that's the difference. Just every team just does things just a little bit different because of their culture and just the different personalities.
That team dynamic changes too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one of the things as an instructor I've noticed, I can teach the same section of a course in the same semester, and the two classes will have completely different personalities. Mm-hmm. That's the same way with these teams. They change on a yearly basis.
No question. No question. And that's the thing I love most about working with the student athletes, work with all of them, not just football, is that there's never a dull moment because there's so many different personalities. You're talking about over 650 student athletes.
Wow.
So I actually enjoy that.
You're the perfect man to deal with this next issue, and that is, let's just take head on this myth of the dumb jock.
Okay.
As a group, and we'll talk about a group here.
Okay.
How do student athletes compare to the normal student population as far as academics and how they do?
Well, I don't know how they necessarily compare,
okay,
but I would say this, that if you're a student athlete here at Texas A&M, and you're competing at a high level athletically, and you're going to class, and you're getting a degree, I think you've got to have a certain skill set to be able to do that. That's not easy.
Right.
You know, and I take you back. I read an article last March in the Wall Street Journal, and it was talking about how all these people were so successful in life. They were CEOs, lawyers, and doctors. Mm-hmm. The one common thread with all of them, they were all former student athletes.
Mm.
And they said, well, why are you so successful? They said, because of the things that I learned from being a student athlete.
Yeah.
There are transferable skills. And so I would say that if you're a student athlete and you're graduating, that you're going to have certain things that you can take out into the real world and be successful, you know. And so I just think those are things that you, other than unless you're in the military, I don't know where else you would learn some of the things you learn from being a student athlete.
And you know, I can't speak for the history of some sports, but nowadays the complexity of play is such in so many of these sports that if a kid is not bright, they're not ever going to get on the field. I mean, I think about football playbooks, and we'll talk to you about that. The football playbooks are incredibly complex things that they have to digest, learn. I mean, I think about a wide receiver coming to the line, how many different reads. Let's talk about defensive end. How many reads have you got to make before the ball is ever snapped?
Yeah, I tell you, it's a very fast game, so you have to be able to make decisions, make plays on a run. But, yeah, and just to concur with what you said, Bill Belichick, that's one of his biggest things. When you look at his teams – most of his guys have graduated, which that's something he looks at, and they're just smart players. And you look at the success that he's had, but there's something that goes into the picking of his players. He wants smart guys.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the difference between coaching at the college level and the pro level in both the systems and in the players themselves?
Well, okay, first off, college you're not going to be as complicated just because you don't have the time. No, you have your 20-hour rule. So that's
tell the audience about the 20-hour rule.
So basically the 20-hour rule is basically saying that you only are able to practice, watch film, do anything that deals with a sport for 20 hours. So anything outside of that would be a violation, an NCAA violation.
Is that really enforced?
Yes. Very much so.
You know, I have to ask because the audience is sitting there going, yeah, right.
Yeah. And now, obviously, if you want to be the best at what you do, you can come in as a player and get more time in, which most players will do that. If you want to be average, yeah, you're doing 20 hours. If you want to be the best, you're putting in extra time, but it has to be on your own.
Yeah. Well, we want the audience also to think about, we talk about full-time job being 40 hours a week. If they're limited to 20 hours and the better players do more than that, we're looking at minimal a halftime job, if not more, to be an athlete.
Yeah, I would say, really, you're putting in another 10 to 15 hours on top of the 20 hours by yourself as a player, if you're trying to be good.
Okay, so we got the 20-hour rule out of the way.
So, okay, obviously you can't be as complicated.
Yeah.
And then at the NFL level, everything is faster. Everything is much faster, you know, in terms of the players are bigger, they're faster. Everything just happens at a rapid rate. And so those are probably two of the biggest differences between college and NFL.
Is that one of the measures of success for those players, the ones that can adapt to that change in speed?
Oh, yeah, because either you adapt or you're going to get weeded out. That's just the nature of it, especially at that level, you know, because now you're getting paid, you know. And so it's a business, and that's probably another difference. Whereas in college, you know, there's a little more emphasis on the development of the students because they are student athletes. Whereas at the NFL, it's more of a job and you're getting paid a lot of money to do a job. And so it's more of a business. So,
with all the fluidity of that kind of business, it's you don't play well?
yeah,
you're gone.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're a kicker.
No question.
And we won't get into kickers. So let's talk about your life as a student and what you've translated now for the current students that you have. What were some of your methods for excelling in school that led you to the achievement award that you won and your success that you've had since you left?
Well, you know, for me, a lot of things kind of generated for me just playing athletics most of my life. You know, growing up, playing Little League, playing in middle school, playing in high school. And in order to be good at anything athletically, you had to put in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that. Mm-hmm. And I watched myself grow as an athlete. But the same thing applies for a student. You know, for me, when I went into a classroom, I was competing.
Mm. You know, because competing with everybody else in the class. Yeah.
No, because life is about competition.
Yeah.
And so when I step into the classroom, I may not have had the highest SAT score out of high school, whatever the case, but I was in the classroom with these same students.
Right.
And my thing was I was going to compete against them.
How do you get students to take that attitude? Because, you know, there's so much nowadays we hear about students not caring about whether or not they do well in class, that there's a social stigma about being smart.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, what I try to relate to the student athletes is the same approach you take in terms of being successful athletically, mm-hmm. you take that same approach into the classroom.
It's just another competition.
Yeah, it's just another form of competition. And if you take that approach, more times than not, you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
And then it's the same approach you're going to take out into the real world when you're done playing athletics. When you go out and you have to go work for whomever, it's that same approach. All the things that you learn from being an athlete, the hard work, you know, setting goals, reaching goals, having to deal with adversity, all of those lessons, take it with you, you know.
And it seems like today's social media world has really amped up the external pressures that kids get, especially if they gain somewhat of notoriety on the field or whatever, then they're really watched very closely.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help students deal with that? Because, you know, we've had a recent case where the course choices of one of our players was roundly criticized in the national press, but on hindsight was probably the best thing for him to do.
Well, I think the biggest difference is distractions.
Mm.
Anytime you have more access to more things, they can lead to distractions.
Mm.
And so I always tell them, just be careful what you're doing.
Mm.
Don't spend too much of your time with the social media. And I know this is the social media age. but also understand that what you're saying, it doesn't go away.
Right.
And then when you're getting ready to find a job and companies are doing background checks on you, a lot of that stuff comes back up. So just be smart.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say limit it. Don't overdo it. I think everything in moderation, you know. So
that's something that you and I didn't have to deal with.
No, I know.
Which is fortunate,
yep,
actually.
Yep.
I'm glad there are some things that I said that have gone away.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we've enjoyed having you here today. Thank you so much for being here. As our audience know, we always kind of end with some specific kind of things. Tell us what your most prized memory as an athlete is.
So I would go back to the Cotton Bowl,
mm.
my last game as an Aggie. Playing the UCLA Bruins, and I sacked Cade McNown for safety. So that was a thrill.
Yeah. And that's not a team we get to play often.
No.
The Aggies, for whatever reason, we don't play UCLA very often.
And Cade McNown was a first-round draft pick, too. So that I
like
that.
Oh, so that made it even better. So there's a lot of hype around that.
Yes.
Yeah. As people listen today, what's the take-home message you want them to take away from this today?
I think the big thing when you think of student-athletes – to me, they have a skill set and they have opportunities and learning experience that a lot of people don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And that can prepare them for life after. And to me, it's about development.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can help develop our student athletes, especially here at Texas A&M, because you think about the academic institution we have here, that we're basically developing future leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They have some innate ability that they can go out and they can make an impact in their sphere of influence.
Excellent. Excellent take-home message. Mm-hmm. Again, thank you for being with us today.
No, thanks for having me.
And I'd like to thank all of you that are listening for taking the time to download us and listen today. And as always, we have our question of the week. And here with the question of the week is Kelly.
According to the NCAA rules, how many hours a week can a student athlete engage in sports-specific supervised activities?
be the first one to email us at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu with a correct answer to that. Zarek's sitting here dying to answer that question, but we're not letting him answer the question. Be the first one to give us the correct answer to that, and you'll win one of those nifty podcast T-shirts. And as I keep saying over the last several weeks, better hurry up and answer it because we're running out of those T-shirts, and you want to make sure you have a full collection of them. We've enjoyed having Zarek with us again. Thank you with us. And we've enjoyed having all of you with us as well. We hope that you take the time next week to download us and listen to us, and we'll bring another interesting individual from the world of sports medicine and human performance to your earphones. And until then, we hope you have an active and healthy week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.